you're here. Fellowship, freedom, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair.
Everyone loves you.
Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's Friday, March 10th, 2017, and I'm excited about today's broadcast. I have a special guest in the studio with me. In fact, not just a special guest, a becoming new friend.
Yeah,
in fact, I think, Dustin, because of our kindred spirits, our love for the Lord, our witness to seeing God transform our lives,
right.
Some of your story, I think your personality, you have a good radio voice, but he's a good ping pong player,
amen.
And so when we're all done, we might even get a little table tennis in. But I met Dustin a few weeks back. He came by the center with a flyer telling me that he was a part of a ministry called Loves and Fishes, he and his church, and they wanted to help the homeless, help anyone in need, and they had this event going on. And so I said, yeah, sure, I'll be happy to promote it. And then I think you came by again, and we recorded you announcing the spot and invitation for the Great News Radio listeners, basically to come out tomorrow now. It's been airing for a few weeks. And so as I got to know Dustin a little more through these different visits, I was intrigued by some of his story. And it's one of those where from addiction to a deliverance. Mm. And I think you said from ashes to
beauty.
Ashes to beauty. Mm. And so before we get into talking about some of the specifics of what's going on tomorrow called Come and Break Bread with Us, Loaves and Fishes at Westside Park, 12 to 2 p.m., and the ways our Great News Radio listeners can get involved,
sure.
I felt like some of your testimony, I think, will have that redemptive work for people to not only say there is hope, for maybe some of the situations where maybe it's some of their children that are lost or involved in drugs or
mm-hmm.
some that they feel like my children or my spouse is the prodigal and, mm-hmm. you know, he's away from the Lord and can he turn back? Can you take us through some of your journey? Because I know now God's using a lot of ways. You even have a recovery ministry, what it's called, Take It Back Recovery Ministry,
That's
I think.
That's right, yep.
So give us a few snapshots into some of your spiritual journey these many years and how you've come out of drug addiction and being homeless to being well-dressed for radio today with a sport coat on, looking good, sounding good, and in seminary
sure, yeah.
and involved in your church mm-hmm. and being used of the Lord in a variety of ways. But it hasn't always been that way, so take us back some years.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate it, Mark. I really have to start because I have come to find out that it's very important and it was a very key element in what ended up being the bonds of addiction and the chains mm-hmm. of the enemy for probably 16 years of my life was a lot of the things that happened as a child when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. I lived in a very performance-based home, single mom. She was an entrepreneur, owned her own cosmetic lines and dress studios and restaurants, and made lots of things happen. But in that, she was gone a lot. There was a lot of absence there. And so a lot of responsibility fell on me at a very early age.
Now, did you have brothers or sisters?
I did. I had a little brother. He was 6 years younger than me. So it was get us ready for school and get us on the bus and come home and make dinner and at 13 and 14 and 15 mm-hmm. years old. Anyway, she also was very abusive when things were not. She had a very high degree of perfection. She demanded perfection. Everything she did, she considered to be perfect. So kind of fell to me to do the same thing. Anyway, so when she would come home and things were not done perfectly, we really got into a lot of physical and mental and verbal abuse and whatnot. So anyway, so that went on for a really long time, and I didn't know it at the time, but what was happening was the enemy was actually using my mother to put shame and guilt
right.
and unforgiveness and hate, and really started kind of setting up camp in my heart at a very early age, actually, and I didn't know that was going on. The largest thing and probably the most evident thing years later that I came to find out was what it did instill in me was the spirit of rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really where a lot of my problems came from, was not so much even the infection in my heart from the resentments towards my mother, but that there was a spirit that attached to me, and it was a spirit of rebellion, and it was very powerful. So
now at this point, any attendance at church, any grandparents or people pouring in Christian beliefs or a concept of God, or where were you spiritually at this point?
I have to say probably my only understanding of God came from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
There was no church, and her understanding of God God was, me and God have special arrangements. It was, we got it worked out. You know, it maybe it applies to everybody else, but it's for me and, you know, me and God, we got a special understanding for us. And so there was no really strong presence. There was definitely was not a strong spiritual presence. Right. And as far as what I knew about church and all that, it was very, very lopsided to what the truth of it was.
So here you are holding down the fort as a young 13, 14-year-old. This rebellious spirit is growing. There's some anger, some resentment. Your mom's away from home. Did you start acting out? Did you get in trouble at school? What was, like, the pattern of the next 5 to 10 years?
You know, it's really funny because I really didn't. It was up till I was 17. I was 17 years old because my brother was actually 11. So I was 17 years old, and this went on and on and on and continued to get worse and worse and worse, basically. By the time I hit 17 years old, right before I turned 17, my mother actually was diagnosed with delusional paranoid schizophrenia. Mm. Now, in these years up to me being 17 years old, I never really did act out. And I think a lot of that was fear, probably. I made sure that I got my work done. I played football. I made sure that I had okay grades. And I think a lot of that was done just out of fear alone, yeah, to be honest with you. So I really didn't start acting out. But as that diagnosis, that mental disorder, started increasing in my mother and things got worse and worse in that aspect, at 17, I finally just couldn't take it anymore. And we got to the point to where the government was following us and listening to us on the radio. I mean, and it got pretty real, and it got really scary for my younger brother, and I just couldn't deal with it anymore, and that was when I actually left. She went to hit me in my face. I'll never forget it. She went to smack me in my face one time, that she did many times, and in that moment, I caught her hand for the very first time, actually. I had never stopped her before, and I caught her hand, and I said, Mom, I'm not a little kid anymore, and you're not going to hit me anymore. Mm-hmm. So I kind of tossed her hand down, and I walked out the door, and that was the day that I left home.
Hmm. Where did you head? What was your future like?
Well, that is when that spirit of rebellion kicked in. I think it kind of was, like I said, it was kind of odd, but I came out from underneath that shadow of fear, turned into, and that's when it really started, it really manifested, I guess I should say. I went out and I linked up with a friend who was also very rebellious due to his childhood. We left, went into the street, and when I say that, I mean I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, by the way. We got linked together with a lot of gang activity, kind of a family outside of a family. They accepted me for who I was and my rebellious spirit. They loved it because it
probably celebrated it.
Exactly. And so we kind of got into that group, started committing a lot of gang violence in that anger and in that resentment. A lot of violence was birthed. Started selling drugs because I needed money because I didn't have it coming from Mom anymore, obviously. I wasn't going to go to work because I just wasn't. So that really, really started cultivating the grounds for the addiction. What was funny is that I got into the sales of drugs long before I ever really started doing them. And I got caught up in that lifestyle before I ever got addicted to the substance itself, which is kind of odd. But so that went on and on, not knowing it at the time, but God's grace, I ran into a sales company. Guy was actually working for the company at the time. I ran into him, and he said, "Man, have you ever thought about, you know, doing sales?" And he, and I was like, "No, man, I'm not a, you know." And he goes, "Well, you do sales now, don't you?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Well."
So he knew you were part of a gang or selling drugs.
Yeah, absolutely. And he said, I think you can take what you do now, and I think you could do it legitimately, and I think you can, maybe it's a way for you to get out of this mess you're in, you know." And
is this guy a believer?
No, not at all. No, just somebody that saw a potential to make money. To be honest with you, is where it came from. So I took him up on it, and come to find out, I was really good at it. In 8.5 months at coming into this company at 18 and a half years old is about how old I was, I guess, a little over 18. I came into the company 8.5 months later. I opened up my own company in Knoxville, Tennessee. Mm. I went from a salesman out on the street to the owner of my own office, keys handed to me, warehouse full of. And it was crazy because a year before that, I was running around in the street gangbanging and selling drugs. Mm-hmm. And a year before that, I was getting beat by my mom, and she was so it was just nuts how it all transpired. Yeah. So went to Knoxville, and that's when the addiction started. Mm. I was making way too much money. I was young. It was, it's University of Tennessee town, college girls all over the place. And that's where I really started peddling with cocaine. Did it for the first time, got together with a girl. She liked doing it. I was familiar with it because of the sales aspect of things. Mm-hmm. My spirit of rebellion was going crazy because now I had my own office and all this money, and it was just having a heyday. And so that's where the actual addiction to the substance really started.
Obviously, that affected sales in your work. And can you balance both with that kind of an addiction?
You can balance it for a little while, I think, to some degree, but eventually you always lose it in the end, because that's how the enemy works. He'll give you a little and then take it all back from you. So, but anyway, I did balance it. However, I ended up having to file bankruptcy on the business because I went into about $14,000 in debt because of a cocaine addiction. So the company came, shut me down, went back to Nashville, met my first son's mother. She was down there visiting her mother. She was from Champaign, Urbana. And when I ran into her, we got together, same addiction, same spirit of rebellion, same infection. And she got pregnant, wanted to come move back to Champaign, Urbana, because it's where she was from. And I had an ultimatum. She actually gave me an ultimatum. She said, you can continue doing what you're doing. I'm going back home. I looked at it as an opportunity maybe to kind of be delivered from some of the things that were going on and what was in my heart. And I'm like, man, you know, if I go be a dad, you know, then maybe I can kind of redirect some of this infection, and maybe that'll give me some deliverance and some healing. And so I said, oh, well, I'm going to go with you, you know.
And again, during this time, no seeking the Lord, no like influence that Christians are come alongside saying, hey, there is one way, there's an alternative to this lifestyle.
None at all. I knew they were out there. I mean, right. You drive down the street and see church signs all over the place, you know. I mean, I knew it was there. It's funny because I was just talking to my associate pastor about this yesterday, and he asked me and said, you know, do you think that the fact that you didn't know anything about God, you know, through all of this stuff, do you think that made it worse? Or do you think if you would have known about him before, you know, that maybe it would have been shorter lived? And my answer to that was, I always knew there was a God.
Right.
I think that all of us, you know, I can't speak for everybody, but I think everybody deep down inside, we're created in God's own image.
Right.
So our morals in general come from him. And I always knew that there was a God, but in that rebellion, I also knew that if I cried out to him, that he just might deliver me from all of this mess. Right. And in that rebellion, I wasn't going to give that a shot.
Right.
It was a fear of being delivered because I wanted to do what I wanted to do because I never got to do it before.
Well, and we want to be our own gods too.
Sure.
We don't want to take orders or submit to a higher authority.
Right, sure. Absolutely.
Okay, so you're in the Champaign-Urbana area kind of thinking maybe being a dad's going to somehow clean up my life.
Sure, right. Hoping that, that would work. However, it only got worse. My son's born. I'm feeling pretty good about it. And it was like the newness wore off. And I know that sounds crazy to say when you think about, you know, if you've never been an addict and you have a child, like, what is he talking about, you know? But that's really what happened. The newness wore off. And it wasn't exciting, and it wasn't, and I slowly started to see that my son was not going to deliver me. And so, you know, the verse in the Bible that says that when you cast a demon out of a man, it goes and wanders in dry places, and it comes back and returns the house that it came from. It's clean and swept and put in order. So then it goes out and it finds seven more demons, more evil than itself, and all eight come back, and the state of that man is worse than the first. Kind of what happened. My cocaine addiction fired back up again. This time, though, however, it wasn't only my addiction. I brought my son's mother, and technically speaking, I brought my son into it with me, too, because now he's an absentee father. She started doing the drugs with me, so now she's getting this substance abuse addiction as well. My temper and my moods are up and down all the time, you know, based off of the supply of my addiction and whether or not I can get my hands on what I need to get my hands on. And anyway, so now, and not just my infection, but the same shame, the same guilt, the same anger, the same unforgiveness, now was not only my infection, but now it became hers as well, my son's mother. And even though he was very young at the time, it was trickling to him too. And he just, you know, there's no way to gauge that, but that's indeed what was happening. So my cocaine addiction turned to crack, and that went on for about 7 years. And through that crack addiction, got myself in all kind of trouble with the law, had theft charges and warrants and fines to pay, and in and out of jail throughout this whole experience. Once I got to Champaign-Urbana, in and out of jail.
And part of this time you were living out in the streets?
No, that actually came right after this, leading up to this. That crack addiction completely destroyed my household and my relationship with my son and his mother, and it finally just tore it apart. And that was the first time that I actually really got a taste of homelessness. A lot of people, you know, when you picture a homeless person, you picture sleeping on a park bench or out underneath the overpass or, you know, or whatever. And that indeed is homelessness. But technically speaking, homelessness is if you don't have, you know, you don't have an address and you're sleeping on people's couches and bouncing from place to place and living out of a bag like I was, you're homeless. So that's where that part of it started. Not necessarily the sleeping on the park bench and in McDonald's, and, you know, I wasn't doing that yet, but I was definitely, I was homeless. homeless. I had no home at that point because of my addiction. And we all have a decision to make, and in that moment I had to make a decision, is did I care more about my home and my family and my children than I did my addiction? And the answer was no, I cared more about my addiction.
But there's a bright side to this story.
Sure.
We're
going
to come back because somebody might just be tuning in now and thinking, what's going on? Who is this person? I have with me in the studio at the Great News Radio Center is Justin Brown, who's the director of Loaves and Fishes. In fact, tomorrow's the special outreach. It's Come and Break Bread with Us. It's Saturday, tomorrow, March 11th at Westside Park, 12 to 2. And it's a great way to support this ministry by bringing some essential items, toothpaste, toothbrushes. You'll maybe recite some of the things at the end of the program, or clothing. And it's happening at Westside Park, 12 to 2 tomorrow. If you need more information, you can call 217-637-2883, 217-637-2883. And as I mentioned at the beginning of this broadcast, Dustin and I have just gotten to know each other over the past few weeks, and I thought, I've got to have him in for like a Testimony Tuesday, but with tomorrow being the event, it's a Testimony Friday.
Sure.
And so I think I'm going to title this program From Addiction to Deliverance. And so you've kind of painted the picture for those that have been tuned in for the past 20 minutes, and this program is archived, so if you missed a portion, you can go to greatnewsradio.org and click on our archive programs link, and you can hear it in its entirety. So, Dustin, things are looking bleak.
Sure.
You went from cocaine to crack. Mm-hmm. You basically have lost your son. Mm-hmm. You're on the streets. You don't have an address. You have this addiction. You're unemployed. What was those transitional moments to get to this point where you recognize that God could bring about healing and deliverance and hope?
Sure. To kind of fast forward, I ended up on drug court here in Champaign-Urbana. I took drug court because I didn't want to go to prison for some of the criminal activities I was committing. I was no way ready to stop using. So after I had dropped dirty three or four times and they were about to send me to prison because I was still playing games, I ended up leaving, and I went to Arkansas, Branson, Missouri, and northern Arkansas area. And there, my addiction continued, same principle, same infection, same hatred, same rebellion. And after about 5 years in Arkansas and in Branson, I finally came to the end of my road, so to speak. I was actually, had been, and it was actually in Branson where I became homeless, the picture of homeless. I was breaking into the back of hotel windows and sleeping in the hotel room and then sneaking out the back, you know, before morning came, sleeping in McDonald's benches outside. It was homeless. Right. Anyway, so as I was doing that, I finally had got to the point to where I had no other, I was all out of options. I like to say that all my idols had actually been destroyed. I couldn't call not one person that would pick the phone up. I couldn't borrow a dollar bill from anybody. And I know that sounds funny, but it's true. And I was completely broken, and I was completely lost to the point that I was ready. I was ready to die. I would have just assumed died. It would have been easier for me at that point, I think. And I saw no hope, actually. And I tell you what, God comes and meets us where we are. And after I had been wandering for about 3 days, I was actually in the worst ice storm that Branson, Missouri had seen up to that point, and the worst one that it has seen since then. And it was December 16, 2013, and it was about 2:30 in the morning. And I was walking, and the ice was up to a little past my ankles and my shin, and it was coming down on me and on my head and my shoulders, and I was just exhausted, and I was done. And I fell down in the ice, not fell down because I slipped, but I fell down because I was exhausted in that ice, and I wanted to stay there. I really wanted to stay there. And I don't have this whole, you know, church story where they played some fancy music, and I walked up the aisle and somebody said, repeat after me, and, you know, and said this prayer of salvation. Like, that's not my story. What happened to me is that God let me come all the way to the end of myself.
Right.
And he let me do that because he loved me. He said, you know, I'm going to let you, I'm going to give you your heart's desire, and this is all of the things that you want, so I'm going to give it to you until it's gone. When I got to that place and I was on my face and there was nothing left but God, and I heard him, and he just spoke to me, and he said, get up. I just heard, get up. And I lifted myself up, and I'll never forget it. I looked up, you know, towards the sky, and I said, I'm a wreck. Like, almost to him, like, what do you mean, get up? I'm a wreck. And I'll never forget it. It was not a scream, but it was just despair. And the way that I said that, and I said, I'm a wreck, and I have no idea how you're going to fix me, is what I said. But I'll trust you. And that's what I said to him. I said, I'll trust you. I have no idea what you're going to do, but I'll trust you. So he picked me up off that ice, and I kept trudging through till about 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning. The next morning, I was walking through an apartment complex, still unsure what God was going to do. I just knew that he was going to do something at that point. I had no idea what. And a cop car pulled in, and at this point in time, I had warrants in 3 states and about 9 counties from all of my activities that I had done throughout that time. And when I saw the cop car, he pulled in. He wasn't there for me. Obviously, he pulled in the parking lot. And then again, I heard God say, "Are you ready?" And I said, "For what?" And he said, "You said you were going to trust me, and it's time." And I said, "Okay." And I knew what he meant. And I literally walked over to the cop car, and I knocked on the window. And he rolled down the window, and I said, "Hey, my name is Dustin Brown, and I got warrants all over the place, and you've been looking for me for a while, and I'm here to turn myself in. I'm done." And cop said, "What's your name?" And I told him again, and he pulled up my stuff, and he goes, "You're right." And he said, "You got warrants everywhere." And I said, "Yeah, I know it." And he goes, "This is a first." And I said, "Yeah, I bet it is. And he said, "I feel like I don't even need to cuff you." And I said, "Well," I said, "you don't have to." I said, I'm done." And he actually cuffed me in the front, and you know, and he put me in the car. So I did 7.5 months in jail. In that 7.5 months, I did nothing except for read the Word of God and pray, because there wasn't a whole lot to do, and it kept me out of trouble. But I had this new hunger and this desire, and I didn't know what it meant, and I didn't know where it was going, and I couldn't tell you any theology about the Bible, and I couldn't tell you any of that. But I knew that something was birthed in me in that ice storm, and I just knew it. And I went after the Word of God with my whole heart. I did. I didn't understand it all, and I didn't even want to understand it all. I just knew that if I kept seeking, that I was going to find out what this God thing was all about. And as I was doing that, he started writing his word upon my heart. I started learning more and more about Christ, but it wasn't in a church and it wasn't from a pastor. Right. It was from alone time with God, with the word in front of me, with a pen and a stack of paper, and writing and writing and praying and reading and writing and reading. And it's amazing because in that alone time, that's where that transformation really began. So I got out. I went to, after they released me, I went to a 12-month long discipleship and accountability program called New Life Temple in Hollister, Missouri. God kind of finished his work for that moment in that season. He kind of finished that moment off and that work that he was working in me. I graduated that program. In that short amount of time, God demolished every debt that I had to the legal system. All the warrants were taken care of. I had full custody of my 3.5-year-old. My 16-year-old and I have, had a great relationship at that point. And the only thing I had left was this warrant here hanging over my head from Champaign. From whatever reason, it never showed up. Today, I think that God left it there on purpose just to test me and say, "Hey, okay, so you've seen all this and you trusted me and you've seen what I've done in your life. Now, what are you going to do? I'm going to leave this for you to make a decision." And so the day after I graduated the program, I showed back up. I walked into Judge Ford's courtroom, saw God's grace manifested in that. I only did a week in jail after 5 years, $200,000 felony absconding warrant. But when God's for you, nobody can be against you. And that favor and that grace really kicked in. And I saw it through drug court, and I'm thankful for that. And I saw it through Judge Ford. Anyway, so I did a week in jail. I got out. He reinstated me. And in the year and 3 months that I've been back and graduated drug court since then, God then decided that he was going to use me and that I was at a place where he was ready to use me to give back to other people. So since then, he started Loaves and Fishes, which is a homeless and needy outreach. It's a burden he put on my heart. Started with the idea of grilling some hot dogs, turned into something much larger than that with community churches involved. And every 5 weeks, we have an event. All throughout the year in Westside Park, we make a bunch of food. We hand out T-shirts and socks and clothes and underwear and hygiene products and Bibles. And most importantly, we preach the good news of Jesus Christ at that event.
Okay, so in our closing 1 minute,
sure.
Give the essentials of how our listeners can get involved, what they can bring, why they should attend tomorrow, and the specific times.
Sure, absolutely. Tomorrow at 11 o'clock, we'll be meeting at Westside Park. If you would like to come at 10 o'clock in the morning at the church, which is 2111 Willow Road, which is a Ministry of Faith Church is the name of the church in Urbana. If you can't make it to the church by 10, meet us at the park at 11. We'll start setting up. The event starts at 12. It runs through 2 o'clock. We would love for you just to come and volunteer your time. We have lots to do as far as, folding clothes and handing out foods and getting in one of the lines, of distributing some of the things that we have. If you would like to bring clothes yourself, shoes, men's clothing, jeans, T-shirts, jackets, I mean, it's a homeless ministry. We take just about anything. We'll get rid of it. But most importantly, we're looking for people to get involved and come together in unity to fulfill the commandment of Jesus Christ, and that's to reach out to the least of these. So we would love to have you at 10 o'clock at the church, 11 o'clock at the park. park. Yeah, come down and hang out and bring stuff if you want, or just bring yourself.
And I think you're going to be providing food, hot dogs, burgers, snacks from 12 to 2.
Sure, absolutely.
So tomorrow, Westside Park in Champaign, 12 to 2 p.m. If you want to volunteer or want to know more information, you can call 217-637-2883, 217-637-2883. And we didn't even have time to talk about the Take It Back Recovery Ministry, but I trust that any of the listeners that have been encouraged by your testimony in today's broadcast can come and meet you tomorrow, right? You'll be
sure.
There?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be there the whole time. Sure.
Westside Park, the event itself is 12 to 2, but if you want to volunteer and help, be at the park at 11 or at the church at 10. Yeah. And the church location is?
2111 Willow Road in Urbana. It's right next to Cracker Barrel and Steak and Shake off of Cunningham. Big giant white church with big orange buses in the parking lot. You can't miss it.
For more information, call 217-637-2883. Well, thank you, Dustin, for sharing your testimony,
you.
And I look forward to participating in this event. Come and break bread with us, loaves and fishes, tomorrow to help the homeless and anyone in need, Westside Park, between the hours of 12 and 2 p.m. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you. Have a great day and night.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now